We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Do you have, I'm assuming, but let me ask you just, do you have a like a sprinkler system at your home?
We do.
Yeah. And I do too, but you know, I don't know what the rules are like in Illinois. This is probably pretty standard, but you have to get those backflow tests and stuff like that. Do you have to get those? Is that a Missouri thing?
We have to call Patrick Daniel.
Yeah, right. So anyway, I don't even know what quite can't.
I don't know what is that.
Right. I have no idea, Carol. All I know is that you're not supposed to, like, you have to pay a company to come in and test it and do a backflow. And then that has to be given to the county because I think they're worried about things backing up in sewer. I really don't know. I should know this.
Now, this I'm understanding. So your sprinkler system is connected to the city's water.
No idea. I don't know. I know is they always tell me I need this stupid thing and I always have to get it. But the point of the story was, is that if you don't get on the schedule early in the spring, there's a delay. So we were lax in getting
the
irrigation folks. Well, they finally came, but here's the great irony. So my grass is just burning up. I tried to manually water it, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, you'd have to water for an hour.
Right. So, and I did that. But now with the sprinklers been back on for like 10 days, but now you have so much rain.
You shouldn't,
shouldn't be sprinkling
at all. And we have neighbors. I hope they're listening. Stop watering your grass, and it's raining. It's ridiculous.
I have a one of those water, like
you have
it's
a
rain gauge
of some kind.
But
yeah.
Does that only stop the sprinklers from going off? Obviously, I know nothing about the things that are in my house. But does that stop them from going off if it's raining only, or if it like rained? I think it's if it rained like a half inch or something, or a quarter inch the night before.
All I can tell you in the Daniel household is Patrick Daniel, who is a landscaper, who is paying attention to the weather,
he
is watching the forecast pretty constantly. And so he knows if it's going to rain, and he will manually turn it off. So I don't know if we have a sensor or not.
All right. Well, he's the sensor.
He is the, that made me want to kiss him. He's the sensor.
He is the sensor and the sensei. Well, all I know is my grass is looking great right now, combination between the sprinkling and all the water. So I'm happy with that.
Well, some of us, we have our water connected to the, it's not a lake, but water.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to,
that made
it's not
no
connected
sense to
the,
me. What are you talking about?
The we get our water from a body of water, not from the city.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so, but still, you still need to be have a conservation heart because it's ridiculous to be watering. You're using the water from the lake, from the pond.
Yeah.
And it's raining.
Right.
But people do that.
Yeah, because like I've even seen the sprinklers go off across here.
Exactly.
When that's happened at
I've seen
lovely
the city,
park we sit across.
Yeah,
from.
When I'm coming off the Museo Veterans Bridge, the sprinklers are going off and it's pouring rain. It's just, it's a waste. Of all things, I don't want to be lazy or wasteful.
Well, I like the first thing. The lazy part I'm okay with, but the wasteful, yeah, maybe not.
And I said that out loud. And my husband listening, who is the censor, he'd be like, she is totally lazy. My husband would say that about me.
I'm just glad my grass is looking. I've always
it's looking
to be,
better.
Well,
is
I've
that the bottom
to
line
be that
here?
Guy for years. I was like the guy who had the worst grass on the planet. Like when I lived in the city, I could
can't believe
never...
you with an ego like you do would allow your
exactly. It wasn't allowed. It was just something that happened in Wisconsin. I had a really beautiful lawn because it was zoysia, and that's rather rare up there. So it stayed brown for longer.
Yeah,
because you only have like 1 month out of the year where things are green in Wisconsin. Anyway, my guest is on the line here, and he's
all right, I'm out.
Probably
I'm
not
out.
Happy that I'm talking about all these things and distracted from the real issues that nobody cares about, my watering of the lawn. And I have no comprehension of why you have to have those tests, but somebody's going to point it out to me. Dave Ray is with us from FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. He's the communications director. I just booked some travel to head out to their event that I try to attend every year, the Hold Their Feet to the Fire event. This year is going to be on the 5th and 6th of September. And the best news about that, Dave, how are you, first of all?
Hey, Mark, doing well. There's got to be some sort of nexus between what the Supreme Court did today and you watering your yard.
We'll figure it out eventually.
Probably figure it out.
Here's some awesome news, though.
Together.
You know, I was looking at the dates with Bob Dane from FAIR, and, you know, when I got the invite for the event, lo and behold, and I'm sure that Bob did this on purpose, the Cardinals are in D.C. that night playing the Nationals on that Wednesday when I roll in, so I'm going to the game. What do you think?
It's always about you.
Yeah, well, no, clearly. Clearly.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you, though, about the immigration issue from this perspective on the family separation situation. Because I do think that a lot of people, obviously, there's polling that shows that 70% of the people, if not more, think that that's an ill-conceived policy. I've been pointing out that some of these things did happen with the Obama administration. But what's the end game for that particular policy from your perspective at FAIR?
Well, you know, the on the family separation issue, this is something that has been going on for years. This was linked to a decision called the Flores decision. That was it was a ruling that goes back to the 80s that mandates that children cannot be held for more than 20 days, and therefore, when parents come in with their children, if you're going to hold the parents and charge them, I mean, if these are criminal aliens, if these parents have kidnapped the kids or what have you, then they have to be separated from the children because children can't be held longer than 20 days. In the case that really got the national notoriety that we're talking about and made the cover of Time magazine, that was never the separation of a child from its parent at all.
Yeah, that's
child
what's amazing.
Yeah, so this entire story was based on this false premise that little girl, who everybody finds adorable, was separated from her mother and terrorized, and that this is family separation. What actually appears to happen, according to the father, is that the little girl was kidnapped by the mother, did not have the approval of the father to take her to the United States. When she entered the United States illegally for the second time, because she's been deported once, the Border Patrol officer walked up to her, asked her to set her child down for a moment, long enough for the photographer, according to the photographer, to snap three frames, and then the little girl was picked up, and she and her mother are in detention together. Now, the mother is going to be charged with a felony for entering the United States on a second time after, you know, coming here the first time and being deported. So that is, she's being charged with a felony, and she will be removed. Now, the little girl is either going to have to be allowed to remain in the detention facility with the mother or sent back to Honduras where her father wants her back. But you got to understand, when they take a camera down through a detention center with kids involved, of the 12,000 kids who are being held, 10,000 of them came here without their parents.
Yeah, see, and that's the point. By the way, Dave, I've been hammering that point here for a week now, ever since I heard Kirstjen Nielsen say that. But it's almost like I'm the only one that is telling people that.
Well, it is a fact, and that, you know, so the Trump administration is trying everything it can do to not separate the kids from their families. But the problem is that if we want to keep kids with the adults who are committing the crime, which is actually what you're doing, and there's nothing else in the adult's background, like in fact these kids aren't being smuggled, that this is actually the parent, because in many cases these people aren't even really the parents, and so the DHS has to separate them because what it is child trafficking.
Yeah, they're the coyotes, as they would
right,
maybe
yeah,
be referred to.
Right, yeah, they're actually coyotes, and they're looking to, you know, they've kidnapped a child so that they can look like a family coming in together, and if they pass for that, then they can only be held for 20 days, and then they're released into the United States. So it's a cat and mouse game, but you know, the administration is trying, has stopped the policy. They are right now working on reuniting the 2,000 children who were separated from their parents. Some of them, though, cannot be reunited because the parents are criminals of some kind. You know, like the instance of the little girl on the cover of Time magazine. That woman should not be allowed into the United States on her own recognizance because she's, you know, had to be deported once already. So it's a difficult issue, and
but you wouldn't, because I certainly don't think that it's in anyone's best interest to separate babies and toddlers in particular from their mothers and their fathers. And I get that there's tricky situations. And I've also pointed out that, look, if you get arrested here in St. Louis and you have a child, depending on the family situation, you're not going to be sitting in a jail cell with your child. But I think that there needs to be in these situations a little bit more compassion. I also think, Dave, and I don't know if you feel this, I don't think that the Trump administration has countered some of these arguments very effectively. effectively. I mean, the marketing usually with Republicans is horrible, but why aren't they out there? And I know that some of them are, and the messaging gets muddled through the media coverage, which is clearly biased, but they seemingly have opportunities here to set the record straight, and they don't take them.
Yeah, this is a very complex issue. It can't be argued on Twitter. I mean, what they are trying to do is keep the parents with the children. However, they are limited to a 20-day length that is the longest they can hold children before these kids have to be handed over to HHS by law. It's called the Flores Statement. So they only have 20 days. The problem is if it takes 45 days to prosecute somebody for illegal entry. So unless they get the courts to agree to lengthen the amount of time that children can stay in detention with their parents, they can't physically, within the boundaries of law, hold the parents for longer than 20 days. So if that is the de facto policy, that once 20 days is up, you're set free, then you've got catch and release all over. This is the essence of the catch and release problem. If I show up in the U.S. with a kid and ask for political asylum, you can't hold me for longer than 20 days.
Right.
If I'm here with a kid and then I'm gone, and 80% of them will never show up for their hearing. So all it is using kids as a shield against U.S. immigration laws. I mean, imagine if Americans could use kids as shields against speeding laws. Like, if I have a child in the car, you can't pull me over. How much more speeding would we have on our roads? I mean, we cannot allow children to be used as shields against law enforcement. Yet at the same time, if it's legal, and right now it's not, we would like to keep the kids with their families while the parents are awaiting deportation, because they certainly should all go back home together. That's in everyone's best interest. It's just that President Trump's hands are tied on this. They haven't done a very effective job of explaining it to the public, but Americans do understand that if you go in with your kids, if I walk in with my 13-year-old son and I, you know, steal something from Walmart and I'm arrested and sent to jail, that my 13-year-old isn't coming with me. My family will be separated because I have broken the law, and not even a federal law at that. And so, you know, on the law and order side, it makes sense. But when you talk to the Border Patrol, and I was just down there about 6 weeks ago, you know, a significant portion of these, quote, parents aren't parents. They have kidnapped these kids. These are coyotes. And so when the Border Patrol encounters them, they don't even, you know, some of these, quote, parents don't even know the birthdays of the kids, their middle names, what town they were born in. They have to separate these kids to protect them from the people claiming to be their family. And so it becomes a very complex situation. And like we said, with the woman who whose child is on the cover of Time magazine and who actually, you know, kind of became the talk of the town on the family separation issue, according to her husband, she kidnapped that child and brought her to the United States. You know, that is a serious crime.
Yeah, it's an undercover aspect of that story.
Felony reentry into the United States, on top of the fact that there never was a family separation, and they're still together at this time in a detention facility with that 20-day limit hanging over the head of her child. So, as you can see, when they talk about legal loopholes, there are two loopholes that need to be closed. One of them is the Flores Statement agreement that, you know, says you can't hold kids for longer than 20 days in detention, which makes family detention impossible. But the other one is called the TVPRA, and it was a trafficking law. In essence, what it says is if a child is from anywhere other than Mexico or Canada, it's nearly impossible to send them back because of protections on child trafficking. So it makes the entire situation much more difficult. Clearly, the government and President Trump needs to explain what they're trying to do better. But ultimately, and this is the bottom line, and this is what your listeners need to know, this is a problem that can only be fixed by Congress. And Democrats are going to be given a choice this week. The Republicans are coming up with some language that will change these loopholes so that people who come in with their children illegally can be held together and sent home. It'll close some of these loopholes. It'll keep families together. Will the Democrats sign on?
No, they will not.
My prediction is no. Why? Because they want uncontrolled, unremitting, total mass immigration.
Yeah, open borders. Yep.
You know, they want open borders.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that, Dave. I gotta tell you though, I gotta go because I'm running a little late here. I'm gonna get yelled at.
Right, so I just get going. And
it's my fault because I killed so much time at the beginning. But look, this is an important issue, and I'm pretty sure you guys can maybe put us in touch with some of the folks on the border. I'm gonna have my producer follow up on that. Dave Ray from Fair this afternoon. I appreciate it. Thanks, Dave.
You bet. Great being with you, Mark. Have a great day.
St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1120, KMOX. Depend on it.
Well, we have severe weather moving through the area and likely to continue throughout the evening, so I wanted to check in with Megan Danhey. Steve joins us live a little bit later this afternoon, but the team over at News 4 is on top of it. And Air Comfort Service Heating and Cooling Storm Center, Megan Danahay, what can you tell us? Man, it was raining hard just a short time ago,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. There's basically three clusters, if you will, of thunderstorms that we're watching. We've got one down around Farmington. Farmington just got pounded. That's moving to the east. It should stay along and south of St. Genevieve. Then there's another big cluster of storms northwest of St. Charles. It's basically along I-70 from Warrenton up into, it's north of Wentzville, up into the Grafton area. And that's pushing off to the east. Big cluster of storms, a lot of heavy rain and lightning. That'll clip the north part of the metro. And then the big cluster of storms that we're watching is out around Columbia to Jeff City.
Uh-oh, yeah, I've seen the radar. That's a pretty big swath. I like that word swath, right?
Swath. Yes, it does cover a swath for sure, and that's all moving to the east. So there's some little spotty things, like there's a little cell around Augusta, north of Pacific, and then there's a little spot of thunder and lightning west of Maryland Heights that's tracking off to the north and east. So basically the bottom line is we've got to deal with scattered showers and thunderstorms really for the rest of the afternoon and into the evening, and any of them could produce some high wind. I think the main threat is high wind and then a little bit of a hail threat. And I think for the Cardinals game tonight.
Yes, you beat me to the punch. That was going to be, well, you know, if people are going to the Muni or the game or whatever, yeah. Is it going to be, kind of a rain delay like last night or potential of a washout?
That's what I'm going to use as a reference to last night. I think in the best case, you get last night where you've got lingering storms close to first pitch and you can't get the first pitch off at 7:15. And then maybe there's a little delay. Maybe it's 20 minutes. Maybe it's an hour. I think that's best case. There could be a pretty good chance of a delay at the beginning of the game.
Well, Bob Costas better be ready because they used him in the rain delays last night. They're going to need someone again tonight.
Now, the worst case is that because I do have some computer models that bubble up more storms around 10 o'clock. So it's like, oh, just when these other storms clear, you get new storms bubbling up at 9, 10 o'clock. So that's a bit of a concern for me, too. I don't want to take their storm chances out after 8 because I've got a couple models that say, yeah, there's new stuff. So there's a pretty good chance of delays at the game tonight at the Muni or wherever you're doing outside.
Okay.
But a lot of that's some pretty heavy rain. So certainly take it easy during the evening commute for sure.
All right. Thank you, Megan, for the update.
Cool.
Appreciate it. Is
we'll
it cooling things?
Soon.
Is it cooling things down at all out there?
Well, the clouds
really.
Have helped. I mean, today we didn't really see a hot day, but man, do we have some heat building for the end of the week? Have you seen those temperatures?
I have, okay. And I'm not happy about it.
I'm
but
not either.
What can you do, right? Summer in St. Louis.
It's here.
All right. Thanks, Megan. We'll
sure thing.
We'll talk to you a little bit later. So I have something here that I kind of promised I would do. So let me do it. Let me see if I can squeeze it in here. Maybe save it till tomorrow, but that would mean I was lying about fitting it in this afternoon. David Harsanyi did a column that says, "Dear Judd and Kumail, you have no idea what a Nazi really is," because you have, or was, you have Kumail Nanjiani, actor, Hollywood type out there, The Big Sick in Silicon Valley, his television show, and others out there, including Judd Apatow, movie director and producer, funny guy, talking about Trump and Nazis. Kumail Nanjiani tweets, "I know there are a bunch of people upset at Nazi comparisons, but the highlighting crimes by immigrants move is literally what the Nazis did. With Jews instead of immigrants, a surefire way to stop being compared to Nazis is to stop acting like them." So Harsanyi does his piece, and he starts it this way. He says, "In September of 1941, the Germans took Kiev. On Hitler's command, the new military governors ordered the roundup of all Jews in the vicinity and marches them north of the city to a place called Babi Yar. There, Jews are stripped naked and taken into a ravine in groups of 10. Once at the bottom, their fate is clear. Among the cries of children, many already separated from their parents. They are made to lie down atop others who had already been murdered. German soldiers then walked across the bodies in the large pit and meticulously shot every man, woman, child, and baby in the head or neck. Then the next group would be brought down and it would happen all over again and again over a period of 2 days until almost 34,000 people were no more. And that was only the third largest massacre of the Jews during World War II. But the killing of children, Jewish and otherwise, started in 1939 when German medical professionals were reporting any child with disability to the authorities and parents started handing them over to special schools where thousands were eliminated using drugs or starvation. All of this before the wholesale industrialized killing of humans was in full swing. And Harsanyi says, if you really believed Donald Trump or Kirstjen Nielsen or Sarah Huckabee Sanders are keen on engaging in this sort of behavior one day or anything close to it, you're a depraved coward for not taking up arms and stopping them. And the only other possible reason for you to constantly compare them to Nazis is that you're tragically illiterate on basic history or hopelessly unimaginative and dishonest partisan, or maybe both. And he goes into how the word Nazi has lost the meaning over decades of partisan abuse. And this is both sides that do this. And I'm always uncomfortable with the Nazi analogies. Though there may be thousands of fitting historic comparisons for people to employ, that's almost always the one they land on. So when celebrities like Kumail Nanjiani or Judd Apatow use Holocaust analogies to smear Republicans, we should probably just ignore them. Neither, after all, have any special insight into these matters. But, you know, with Nanjiani in particular, he says, look, I studied Nazi Germany in college. The Holocaust didn't start overnight. There were 10 years of gradual changes that led to it. So read up about it. What I was stating actually had nothing to do with opinions. It's a fact that Hitler focused on crimes by Jews. Harsanyi responds, look, if Nanjiani had studied the Holocaust in college, he would know that the changes that brought fascism to Germany weren't gradual. The pseudoscientific racial theories that dominated Hitler's thinking weren't new, but his rise was abrupt and violent and could only happen in an environment of indecision and lawlessness. It only took Hitler a few months to gain absolute power after becoming chancellor. After that, war was certain and happened relatively quickly. While perhaps those points are arguable, it is inarguable that 6 million Jews and tens of millions more were killed more quickly than at any other point in history. For humans. So, you know, I get these reports when my son is tweeting. I don't have any alerts for any other tweets except for my 21-year-old son. And he just tweeted something with a Nazi analogy to everything that's going on. It was a retweet because that's what he most often does. I think I'm going to send him this column, though, this afternoon.
Get ready for the Cards and Indians tonight. Emerin Total Access, 620. First pitch with Mike Shannon and John Rooney, 715. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
All right, welcome back. We have coming up here in the next 15 minutes or so an audio cut of the day. We do it every Friday afternoon. Well, actually, that's a lie. That's fake news right there. We do it every afternoon, and my brain is just working in weird ways today. I'm going to blame my my daughter because my wife is out of town, and I'm Mr. Mom again this week. Where was I? Oh, audio cut of the day. You know, I would say that I always pick out really good audio cuts of the day. Sometimes it comes down to the wire. We do this with the help of the producing team, like Dave Klein, who is in the other room right now, and Fred often helps with this as well.
How about Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
But Dave found this one today, and it's epic. It's fair to say it's epic, Dave, I think. Yeah, it's epic. So you don't want to, and I'm not overselling this one. I will say this, it's probably PG-13 rated, which is sometimes okay. It's not going to get as fined by the FCC, but there is risk here because people are going to hear this and say, no, man, it's not. No, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So that's coming up in 12 minutes. You know, I'm bummed out because there's a group of folks in town for something called the Texas 4000. It's to raise money for cancer awareness and prevention. It's the longest annual charity bicycle ride in the world. It's rolling through St. Louis right now, if I remember correctly, from Austin, Texas to Alaska. And we have a couple of riders in here with us right now, Kyler and Daisy. And I'm bummed out because I wanted to ride with you guys tomorrow, and that was my plan, but I had something come up at the last minute. So unfortunately, I can't get out there on the bike. But how are you guys? Welcome to St. Louis, first of all.
Yeah, thank you. We're doing great. Thanks for having us this afternoon.
This is your off day, right?
This is our rest day.
So I had the crew in last year, and this was the first time that I met the Texas 4000 folks. I love the concept. There's a variety of these cross-country trips for charity that cyclists take on. But it's amazing to me. First of all, how many people are on this ride? You guys get a head count here?
We have 21 riders total.
20? Oh, that seems lower than last year. Do you know if it is?
Scott Cruz, race director.
Is it about the same amount? Do you know? Because there was a pretty good group last year. 21 riders. You left when from Austin?
So we left June 2nd, and there are actually three different routes. So there are 21.
Oh, that's why I'm a little confused, because there's different routes that come through and cut through different cities.
Correct.
Yes.
So there are 69 in total. We are the Ozarks route, and we have 21 people. There's a Rockies route that goes to the Rocky Mountains. Then there's a route that goes to the Sierra Nevada mountain range.
How is that all decided? Is it just lottery, or what happens?
So we actually had a sorting helmet, just like in Harry Potter with the sorting hat.
Yeah.
And they put the helmet on our head and yelled out whichever route that we were. But I think a lot of that comes down to the rider's preference, but it's ultimately up to the ride director.
Now, wait a second, Daisy. I just detected something here. That is not a Texas accent, is it? I didn't notice it at first.
Oh.
Are you a Kiwi or Australian?
No, I'm half British.
Oh, see, I missed it. I usually try to get the accents, and I completely blew it. So you're half British and half Texan? Is that
half
what it is?
British, half Japanese.
Okay, I was just kind of teasing there, but I do notice there's a little accent there.
100% Texan.
But you spent time in England, I'm guessing?
Yes.
Okay, that's where the accent comes. Sorry, I get distracted easily. It's the the ADD.
Yeah, thank you for
asking.
So
when you get the assignment on this route, is there any is one route better than the other? Because there's challenges for everything, right? There's wind here in the Midwest. In the Rockies, you got the climbing, although I think that you guys are probably aware of this right now. There's a lot more climbing on this route than maybe people would expect.
Absolutely. Obviously, we're a little biased, and we might say that this route is probably the best.
You get to come through St. Louis,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, and what more could you ask for? But I think everyone has a personal drive and motivation for the route that they're on. Specifically, I have a grandmother who is affected by cancer, and she lives in Minnesota. So one of the main reasons for why I chose the Ozarks route is because we were able to go and visit her. So I'm looking forward to that, and that is very meaningful for me.
Yeah, where you go from here? You go through Illinois up into Iowa eventually, and then Minnesota?
We go into Illinois, we go into Wisconsin.
Oh, Wisconsin too.
Yes, then we cut across into Minnesota and then head on into Canada.
Daisy, do you have someone in particular that motivated you for the ride?
I actually don't. I'm one of few riders that don't have a personal connection to cancer.
That's okay too.
Yes, it is okay.
Right.
I'm driven more by the idea of hope and how it inspires people to keep moving forward, and how hope in somebody's cancer battle can drive them to keep continuing forward and pushing onward.
So how has it gone so far?
It's been great. I mean, I think until the start of the summer, we all functioned as a group of riders. Training, riding together. We were all one team. The second day, we all split up into our different routes, and so I think every route was trying to find its group dynamic and sort through its own individual problems and, figure out, what worked for them and what didn't.
So in other words, problems, if there's someone on the ride you don't like, you try to leave them behind at the rest stop or something like that. Have you done that yet?
Yeah, Daisy does that all the time.
No,
I always leave Kyla behind.
What was interesting last year, now, did you guys know each other before the ride or not?
We did not.
Right. A lot of folks are coming together and you make new friends and it's funny. I've described this to people because I am a cyclist. There are people that are in my life that I would consider very good friends. And I arguably may know my cycling friends better when it comes to the different details of their life. Because when you're on the bike for hours, and I'm usually on, for 3 to 4 hours when I'm doing a longer ride, you're talking with people, when you're not huffing and puffing, you get to know a lot about their lives. It's a dynamic that's rather unique, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I've definitely gotten to know a lot of people through what we call double pace. So cyclists cycling right alongside each other. Have had many deep conversations on the bike that I probably would not have had elsewhere.
Did you guys ride significantly? Because this is the other thing that maybe shocked me from the group that came through last year. I was thinking, oh, these are all cyclists that do things like this. They ride long distances. But in fact, I learned that a lot of the people that were in the ride last year, they signed up for it because they wanted to be motivated and inspired, and they weren't necessarily cyclists to begin with. Is that certainly the case with you guys or not?
Absolutely. I think out of the 69 people, there are maybe 5 or 6 people that actually did a significant amount of cycling prior to this. There were actually some people that didn't know how to ride a bike and were joining the team. So to see their progression from not knowing how to ride a bike until I guess now, you know, tomorrow we're riding 110 miles. We're able to do that and do that quite well.
So best moment and worst moment on the route right now. And if you want to rip on any other states, you're welcome to do that, like Arkansas in particular. But was there anything bad that happened out there yet? Like flat tire or you hit an armadillo or something?
Flat tires are pretty common.
Yeah, that happens, right? But you have support on that, don't you?
We do. We have a trailer full of gear that holds all of our camping equipment, all of our food and bikes, you know, on days that we have to escape some of the lightning. And so I think that might be some of our worst experiences.
Use those gator skins, man. You know, Phil Kogan, who's a friend of mine, the host of The Amazing Race, he did a trip across the country years ago. And I remember talking to him from L.A. into Colorado. I think he said he had like 3 or 4 flats. He put the gator skins on there. And then all the way from the rest of the trip, I think he may have only had 1 flat. So that's my recommendation. And I'm not being paid to say that. What's been the toughest day on the bike?
Oh, definitely one comes to mind. We had 2 consecutive days. One was 115 miles, and then it was followed by 118 miles. And so we were already sore on the second day for this 118-mile ride. And at mile 114, we come across the steepest hill that we have ever seen.
And where was
in our entire cycling career. This was in coming into Nashville.
Okay.
So we were 4 miles from the end.
Big climb, though. You're like, you think you're at the finish, and you're like, oh my goodness, right?
I could not believe it. And at that point, we just accepted it.
A 15% grade.
Yes.
Wait, that's pretty steep.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yes.
And so everyone was at their wit's end, and then we see this.
To put this into perspective, for 8% is pretty challenging. 15% really is going to get you.
Absolutely. It looked like we were biking straight up into the sky.
It was crazy.
That's good for you. Builds character.
Absolutely.
The hill itself, there was a point where it came up to a T intersection on the hill, and you could either go left down the hill or right. And as we're inching up it, we're just praying for a left to go down. And then it tells us right. And so then we had to keep going up it again.
Frustrating, right?
Absolutely.
You know what I do, and you can maybe do this, and Daisy, I know you said you don't have specific inspiration here, but I have a really good friend of mine. He's been on the show a couple of times. His name is Grant Corrigan. His story is amazing. He was paralyzed after a snowmobiling accident many years ago, and he's the most positive person that you'd ever meet in your life. So if I'm on a long ride, let's say I'm doing a century and get to mile 80, which usually is the point where I just want to, you know, punch something, and I ask myself, why am I doing this? I think about Grant and the thing that he has phantom pain in his feet, in just some of the things that he has to go through on a regular daily basis, or cancer. I've had friends, and just recently some friends who have gone through treatment, and I got to give it to him. I don't know if I could get through some of the things that they have to get through with chemo. So those are the kind of things that maybe you think about when you're on a long ride and you face a mountain like that, because realistically, it's not as hard as what some of the folks going through cancer have to deal with, right?
Without a doubt. And I think you make a good point. And days like this where we do have our rest days, we are often visiting hospitals and centers and research centers. And today in particular, we were at the Hope Lodge at the American Cancer Society. And we met a family that handed out wristbands to us and want us to ride with them for the duration of the
Very
ride.
Very cool.
And they say Team Kirsten on them, and it says fight hard. So, you know, even if you don't necessarily have a specific person that you ride for, we meet people every day, and we carry their stories with us.
Have you guys been here to St. Louis before?
It's my first time.
Okay. I have.
Daisy, you have, right? Well, get some barbecue if you haven't yet. Get some Sugar Fire or something like that. Thanks for coming in. Give the website out. People can track your progress. They can make donations. What's the website?
It's texas4000.org.
Kyler, Daisy, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. Good luck. The wind in Illinois, be careful. And it's going to be hot, so stay hydrated. I'm sure you are. But you're doing Alaska when?
August 10th.
August 10th.
Oh, you got a little ways to go, don't you?
You do indeed.
All right, have fun. Let me know how it goes. Thanks, guys. See
you. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, so I want to set this one up just a little bit here, and I also want to warn parents because, although I don't know if this is going to be offensive or anything, but there's maybe perhaps delicate bodily functions that are involved in this particular cut of the day. You're going to get the, you'll understand what I'm saying here in a moment. So the Arizona Diamondbacks have this pitcher named Archie Bradley, and well, these questions come up every once in a while with athletes or anyone else. What was your most embarrassing moment? What was your most embarrassing moment? And here it is.
I was warming up to go in a game, and I knew I had the next hitter. I knew he was on deck. And the at-bat was kind of taken a little bit. And, you know, as a bullpen guy in these big situations, I call them nervous pees. I don't have to pee a lot, but I know I have to pee before I go in the game. I can't believe I'm telling you this. So it's a 2-2 count, and I'm like, man, I have to pee. I have to go pee. So I run in our bathroom real quick. I'm ready to go, and I'm trying to pee, and I actually shit my pants.
Oh.
Like, right before I'm about to go in the game, I pooped my pants.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I know I'm a pitcher away from going in the game, so I'm scrambling to clean myself up. I get it cleaned up the best I can, button my pants up, and our bullpen coach, Mike Ferris, said, hey, you're in the game. So I'm jogging into the game to pitch with poop in my pants, essentially.
Poop in your pants. And did you look to see if it was showing and stuff?
Yes, I did. I did check the mirror. I checked the, you know, white pants were at home. And I actually told my teammates, I stepped out the bathroom. I was like, hey, am I okay? I just myself. Like, I'm about to go into this game. And they didn't believe me. They didn't believe me until they, unfortunately, saw the mess in the bathroom because I didn't have time. I was like, I got to go in the game. And so it was the most uncomfortable I've ever been on the mound.
And
I actually had a good inning. I had a clean inning, and I walked in the dugout, and I was like, guys, I just myself before. They didn't believe me, and then the bullpen came in. They're like, oh, my God, you had to see this.
It's somewhat ironic that you had a clean inning.
Yeah, right? That wasn't very
clean. Things.
But it was just a very – I just felt awkward and uncomfortable and just gross.
Well, I hope you weren't eating lunch at the time, but that's a pretty funny story there from Archie Bradley of the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's why it was our audio cut of the day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.